Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and today we got a little bit of a special one, a little bit of a unique one. I am joined by Frank Kelly. He has touched the sport of lacrosse in so many ways, and we're going to touch on a few of them in this conversation. But for a man who needs no introduction, I will introduce him as a former Cornell lacrosse player and published author of what I think deserves to be called or described as a memoir, but it's called Influence, The Creator's Game, My Story and the Stories of Family, Faith, and Lacrosse. Frank Kelly, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks, Terry. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
So you gave me a copy of this book in San Diego at the World Lacrosse Championships last summer. So it's been out in the world for about a year. Typically, and I haven't interviewed that many writers of books on this podcast, but when I have, the first question is the same, and it's, why did you decide to write this book? And I want to ask that question, but what I want to ask first is, what has it been like having this book out there in the world?
Well, thanks for asking. Clearly, writing the book was a labor of love. It came about, a friend of mine actually wanted to do a book about my dad. And he spent about a year interviewing my dad. My dad kept telling stories about me and my brothers and lacrosse and Fellowship of Christian Athletes and FCA and North Carolina and championships. And Bill Tamulonis, the author of my dad's book, came and said, Frank, your dad's stories are great, but I can't include them all. When I'm done with him, I'd like to work with you on a book of stories. And he worked with me to capture my story and then the stories of others who've been impacted by the Creator's Game. So we know the Native Americans, the Iroquois, the Haudenosaunee, the Six Nations all referred to it as the Creator's Game. They played to please the Creator. And my book is really a story about how I came to know the Creator through the Creator's Game. And it was 40 years ago this year at Cornell, I was a sophomore, that I had a spiritual awakening in the middle of lacrosse practice on Shokoff Field. And so that's unusual. This book chronicles a bit of that story and, more importantly, stories about others who've been impacted by the great game of lacrosse and have had a faith impact as well. And so it took us about 2 years. Bill interviewed 70 people in the lacrosse community, people who've impacted my life and many others who also have had a kind of a spiritual awakening in part through the game of lacrosse, not only in this country, but around the world. So I'm very thankful we were able to get it done. Incredible stories, some great pictures, and a labor of love that I'm glad is over, but it's been a lot of fun sharing with others.
So I appreciate that, and it's kind of a incredible explanation, but you actually kind of answered the second question first.
Okay.
But what's it been like having this out in the world for the last year in terms of the feedback that you've gotten?
It's mainly been fun. You know, my goal in writing it was not to be a New York Times best-selling author. I really don't have experience. I'd actually put together another book a couple of years ago during COVID called Look and See. It's a picture book about birds and flowers. I know that sounds random and crazy, but through that, it kind of got me going. And then I helped get my dad's book done. It's called Surrender to Win. And then, you know, writing this was, again, a unique challenge, but it was refreshing. And in some ways, it was painful recounting some of the stories that humbled me and brought me to my knees, literally. And it was also exciting and a great joy. And it's interesting, it got released June a year ago. And then this summer, I just started to read my own book for the first time. I obviously wrote it, but I sat down and read it. And I'm just so thankful for the stories that we were able to capture them in an accurate, fun, clear way. It's written in a way that lacrosse players can read it and get it. I joke, I have three brothers, as you know, John, who played at Washington College, David at Carolina, Brian at Carolina. We all have a bunch of kids, but I joke that they, you know, most of they're a couple of them have, you know, the ADD, dyslexia. So they do the audio version, but there's plenty of pictures in it. So I tell my brothers, it's really a picture book. So they can enjoy it too. And they laugh right back at me.
So I do want to make the bulk of this conversation about what I think is a very interesting topic. And, you know, it's kind of bifurcated into two ends, faith and spirituality. And obviously there is a strong level of connectivity between the two. But there's also a really interesting element around the notion of the creator, the creator's game, Native Americans, the Haudenosaunee specifically, and their relationship to spirituality and the notion of a creator. But first, you mentioned that you had a spiritual awakening during practice your sophomore year at Cornell, and that that's included in the story. But I think it's difficult to have the conversation about faith with you without getting at least a sense for the flavor of that awakening. So without spoiling things, can you share a little bit of the story and how you came to the moment and how it's affected you since?
Sure, I'd be honored to. You know, grew up in the Baltimore area, public school kid, ended up at Calvert Hall, big Catholic high school, 9 through 12, mainly for football. Was decent little league football player, got a little scholarship, which our family needed at the time. My parents had just started a small business. And when I got there, I was going to play baseball, and the lacrosse coach recruited me, begged me and some football players to play, and I chose to do that. And freshman year, somehow made JV, and 3 years varsity. Next thing you know, I'm getting recruited. I was a decent athlete, good player, not maybe great, but good enough to get recruited by some good schools, and got down to Harvard, Cornell, UVA. Ended up choosing Cornell mainly because I could play football. And Richie Moran was the great coach, loved him, his recruiting, talked to me a lot about football. So in my mind, I was a football player playing lacrosse, go to Cornell, end up playing 2 years of football, 4 years of lacrosse. But freshman year, for the first time, I dealt with some injuries. I got an injury on the last play of the last practice of football. It carried over into lacrosse. It led to shin splints, which unbeknownst to me led to stress fractures. I found out after my freshman year, I played 6 weeks on two stress fractured legs. And I'll tell you what, somewhere in like middle school to high school, sport went from being game to God for me, like my idol, both football and lacrosse. And when I got to Cornell, just so much of my value inside was determined based on my performance on the field. You know, I grew up in a faith tradition, went to church, Catholic high school, had the pieces to the puzzle. I just didn't know how the pieces fit together. I like to say I had some religion. I just didn't have a relationship. And the distance between religion and relationship with God is 18 inches from your head to your heart. And God, as he does, puts people in our paths at different times. And there was an All-American wrestler at Cornell that began talking to me about his relationship with God. And I kind of was looking at him funny. I'm like, I'm religious. I go to church sometimes. And he goes, Frank, I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about a relationship. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then a football teammate also was kind of sharing truth with me in a way I hadn't heard it before, in a relevant way. My parents had had a spiritual awakening. My dad was telling me, because I was calling home complaining because I didn't get much playing time as a freshman. I had these injuries. Richie Moran was all over me. I had some very humiliating situations in my mind. You know, was dressed to play in the Syracuse game. 1 minute before the game, he made me and another guy go in and put our street clothes on. You know, God was humbling me, and he wanted something more for me. My dad said, Frank, and you know, you can look for peace and joy and success on the football field, lacrosse field, classroom party, money. You will not find peace until your relationship with God through Jesus Christ is your priority. And I didn't quite understand it, but one day in the middle of practice, now sophomore year, not getting much time as a freshman, played football, injured. I'm 3 weeks into lacrosse my sophomore year. I'm on fourth string. My legs are killing me. I'm going to get stress fractures for a third time. And Richie Moran had me go to the goal one-on-one, and the long pole stripped me. He was my roommate. And coach said, hey, Kelly, go again. I go again. He stripped me. Coach made a few more comments. Kelly, effing go again. I go again. I get stripped three times. You know, Richie trying to just help me become a better player. I have the greatest respect for him. I thank God for him and the way God used him in my life. But went to the end of that line drill, and Richie had told me, Kelly, you're never going to play here. You'll never play here. So I went to the end of that drill right there on Shokoff, and based on the conversations I'd had, I had tears in my eyes and just said, God, that's it. That's it. If I never play football or lacrosse with you again, if I never play these sports again, I need you in my life. I want a relationship with you. Please come into my life and make me the person you wanted me to be. And I didn't hear thunder. I didn't see lightning. Nothing crazy happened. But that was the beginning of a new relationship with God, a spiritual journey. Went home that night and shared with my dad. I made a decision to make this a new priority and ask God, Lord, into my life. And things began to change. It's interesting. My dad said, the first thing I can tell you, Frank, is, you know, this is practical, but just change your attitude to one of gratitude from here on out, every minute of the day that you can, just be thanking God for your blessings. When you walk across campus, thank him you can walk. Thank him you can see. Thank him that you're at Cornell, even if you're on fourth string. Thank him when you're on the team. Thank him for Richie Moran. I went to practice that next day, and I was praising God under my breath. And I remember early I dropped the pastor, did so. Richie had me by my helmet, shaking it and giving me some choice words. But I had peace. For the first time, I had peace. I went from anger, frustration, you know, talking about transferring, to peace. And that's what I found that began my journey. And, you know, it was 6 months later as a junior, I got invited to a Bible study by that football teammate. And I very nervously went. I'd never been to anything like it. But it was through that Bible study that my life really began to change. And it's really cool, Terry. I just share this. So even this past week, and back in February, March, I was invited to speak to the Cornell Fellowship of Christian Athletes Huddle. And the vast majority of the lacrosse team came out and got to share my story 40 years after that awakening. And ironically, it happened to me when I was a sophomore at Cornell. And last year, my son, JK, was a sophomore on the Cornell lacrosse team. So he was in the room. Some coaches were in the room who were my teammates or my classmates. Jenny Grapp, the head coach of the women's team. Mike Schaefer's the head coach of the ice hockey team. He couldn't make it. But being able to share my story with 100 athletes, a bunch of lacrosse players, some coaches, was a real blessing. And that's a little insight into the beginning of that spiritual journey for me.
And I think there are a couple important takeaways, and I want to drill down on a few of the points you made. But one of the important takeaways is that it wasn't you didn't survive a life-threatening accident. You didn't have some sort of dramatic event that changed your outlook in a way that was fundamental and almost undeniable, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. Like, what I think is really important, and I think that this isn't just about a faith-based relationship. I think it's about pretty much every relationship, specifically a romantic relationship and the notion of love, right? I think a lot of people identify it as an emotion. And, you know, I've found a lot of value in orienting my life around the idea that it's a choice. And it's one that you have to make every day. And that's true. Not... The degree of difficulty is not the same every single day, but typically the outcome or the payoff is. And so one of the things and one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation, because, you know, if you're in my role and you take examples from other elements of media, you know, the example is pretty secular. And I think that the well-intended goal is to be inclusive and welcoming. But one of the things that Scott Van Pelt says all the time, and I appreciate it every single time he does, is that everybody is from somewhere. And the point he's trying to make is that I work in sports. I am going to be a fan of the teams that I am a fan of, right? I'm not going to insult your intelligence and lie to you and say that I am completely objective and totally gotten away from my fanship. And along similar lines, you know, if you're somebody who has a voice and puts information out into the world, who you are, your whole personhood influences that voice. And to, especially if you have a faith-based relationship or even come from, you know, a tradition of faith, that is going to inform that voice, consciously or subconsciously. And there have been a few instances in the, you know, recent past, and Joe Mazzulla's answer when he was asked about being one of a diminishing number of black head coaches during the NBA Finals got a lot of attention when he brought up, I wonder how many Christian coaches there were. And that really resonated with me for a variety of reasons. Number one, it was very plain, right? And it was confrontational, but not argumentative. And I thought he was making what is a valid point, which is there's an element of personhood that is intertwined with faith, religion, and spirituality. And to pretend like it doesn't exist in an effort to be welcoming for others is both dishonest as well as not actually welcoming, because number one, you're probably alienating a certain percentage of the people who want it to be a part of the conversation because they understand how important it is to them, to themselves. And number two, if you get off on a dishonest foot, even well-intended, about your identity, then you're not going to be as welcoming as you think you are. So I think what I've come away from that is, you know, the notion of trying to avoid the topic, you know, for the purposes of for what typically are well-intended purposes of trying to, you know, not alienate somebody who doesn't have the same point of view on faith or religion, is actually not nearly as effective or productive as it is to just identify, you know, this is where I'm at and have a conversation. You know, it might be fruitful, right? For
absolutely.
A certain percentage of people that are listening. So that is a very, I guess I would call it like important, but at the same time, like that wasn't a condition for you insofar as creating this book. Like you were,
no.
Like the book was intended to be in this, right? But at the same time, the issue that is born out of it that you also confront head on with the subhead of the subtitle of the book is you played a sport created by folks who are not from the Christian tradition. And in
Correct.
Fact, the Christian tradition has a very fraught relationship with this community and this sport.
Right.
How do you reconcile that? What are the thoughts that go into that?
That's a great question. And when I wrote the book, and by the word influence is like the one word definition of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, FCA, but it really about the gospel. The Creator's game is a gift God's given us through the Haudenosaunee and the Iroquois. And as you know, there were the six nations, the Onondaga, the Mohawk, the Oneida, the Cayuga, the Seneca, and Tuscarora, you know, who occupied much of northeastern North America, including what is now upstate New York and into Canada. You know, and they played lacrosse as a medicine game to promote the healing of individuals, communities, and nations. And although their young warriors were already really tough, they played to prepare for combat and for recreation at their festivals. And most importantly, they played for the pleasure of the Creator. They played to please their Creator. And, you know, I ran it by a number of leaders in the Native American community, including Alfred Jock, who passed. He read it. Sid Jameson, I asked his opinion. Did not want to do anything to disrespect the Iroquois Haudenosaunee history of the game. And I think you might know this. It was the 1600s when French Jesuit missionaries saw the natives playing this game. And in many kinds, they played the game to settle conflict. Instead of fighting for that piece of land or that body of water, let's play the game. Winner takes the land. And they played to please the Creator. And in some ways, a medicine game, a game of peace. But the French Jesuit missionaries saw the sticks, and the sticks looked like bishop's crosses. So they're the ones who called it lacrosse or the cross. And so there is this integrated connection between the spirituality of the native game. The natives played with wooden sticks carved from the tree. Alfred Jock still carved from the tree. And so you were in touch with nature, even holding the stick in your hand, the leather, the gut, the cow gut leather, whatever it was that made the pocket had meaning. Everything had meaning. But at the highest level, there is a Creator. And so I know I tried to honor that history without denying my own story. So we all have a story. And at the end of the day, this is a book of stories. My story and many others who've been impacted by the game, but also impacted by the gospel. And there are many natives who are Christians who've come to believe, let's say, that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, and that I can have a relationship with this Creator of the universe through him. And so I tried to balance that, respect that. And the stories in the book now, they start in my little world and then, you know, up in Ithaca. And then in one chapter is from Ithaca to Israel. I mean, as you know, we've been at the World Championships with FCA teams serve in Denver in 14, in Israel in 18, in San Diego in whatever, 22 or 3, all there to serve. FCA wants to come and serve and use the lacrosse game to serve others and help the game grow. And, you know, we now have staff, FCA lacrosse staff in, you know, Kenya, Uganda, Ukraine, Singapore, again, using the game to share and bless people and also help them grow in their faith if they want to. And I want to share this, like, about, since it's really about FCA lacrosse, that history, you know, with FCA, it's a faith-based group, but the only requirement to be involved is love lacrosse and be open. Just be open to growing in your relationship with God, the Creator. You know, we all embrace information in different ways. Our experiences are different. you know, we just want to provide opportunities for people to fulfill their potential. We talk a lot about three-dimensional athletes and coaches, mental, physical, spiritual. We all bring those three dimensions. We're just trying to help people fulfill their potential in that way.
So there's a lot there and a lot of meat on the bone. I do want to kind of have a lacrosse conversation, especially about your family, because you've got a pretty special and incredible kind of capstone season coming up in store, but we'll get to that in a second. There is a element of, I mean, we've already discussed, obviously, the origin of the game in terms of the way it's created a bridge to the opportunity to tell a story about the creator. How has the game itself, what is it about lacrosse relative to football, basketball, baseball, in terms of what it's meant for you and your development, and then also in terms of your family's development and FCA lacrosse?
Yeah. Well, I dedicated the book, by the way, to coaches who influenced my life. My high school football coach, Augie Maselli, my first high school lacrosse coach, Tom Kiegler, World USA national team. He just coached JV only 1 year. And then Mike Thomas, the head coach of Calvert Hall, got me to play Richie Moran. You know, there's a quote that says a coach will influence more people in a year than most people will in a lifetime. So when I said influence, I'm talking about faith, but I'm also talking about the influence of a coach. And, you know, my brother John was the first in our family to play. He started playing in like fifth, sixth grade. I was playing baseball. I was saying lacrosse is for wimps, and I was a football guy, tough guy. My younger brother started all playing before me, so I was the last to play, and I'm the oldest of brothers, you know, but we all played at Calvert Hall. We all were blessed to play in college. You know, me at Cornell for Richie. My brother John played in three national championships at Washington College under Terry Corcoran. My brother David played at Carolina, won a national championship freshman year under Willie Scroggs. Funny, he didn't play at all, but he rubbed grass on his uniform and all the pictures. For some reason, he's holding the trophy up high, and he's in a lot of the pictures like he was the star. He's funny. My brother Brian played on Carolina's undefeated national championship team in 91, was a defender, great player. Now he's the head coach at Calvert Hall. So the game's been very good to us as brothers. And as you know, there's a fraternity, there's a unique connection. I can't even explain it. It's kind of like spiritual in nature between in the lacrosse world with your teammates, those you competed against. There's like a brotherhood, sisterhood. And then between me and my brothers, we're blessed to have 21 kids, 15 boys, 6 girls. And some people know, like, 5 of the Kelly cousins ended up at Carolina. My oldest nephew, David, went to Rutgers, but then my son Frankie and Steven at Carolina. My nephews Patrick and Timmy at Carolina. My nephew Jacob at Carolina. They won a couple ACC champions, won a national championship in 16. And you know, as you and I were talking earlier, Terry, this year, one of my nephews, Daniel Kelly's, I guess, a fifth-year senior captain at Maryland. My nephew Mick Kaya Kelly, my brother John's son, is a senior midfielder at Denver. My son, Gail, and our son, JK, who we adopted when he was 2.5 from South Korea, is a junior at Cornell, defender. My nephew, Joshua, my brother Brian's son, is one of his sons, is a sophomore at Georgetown. And my nephew, Ayasu Kelly, my brother David's son, who we adopted when he was 3 years old from Ethiopia, is a sophomore midfielder at Dickinson. So instead of 5 Kellys at Carolina, there's 5 Kellys on all these different teams. My dad jokes, I know my final 4 picks, Maryland, Denver, Cornell, Georgetown, and never know, it could happen. But it is kind of unique to have 5 cousins on 5 different teams playing at that level. We're just very thankful. The game's been so good to me and my brothers, our family, now the next generation. And we want to give back to the game, you know, that's blessed us so much.
One more thing about the book that I wanted to touch on, and you brought it up, you kind of glanced at it, I suppose, when you talked about the influence of coaches, is that John Gordon wrote the foreword. And, you know, if there is somebody who probably deserves to be described as a coach whisperer, it's John Gordon. How did that come to be, what's your relationship with him? Like, why did you want him to do the foreword?
Great question. Thank you for asking. Well, John was a Cornell student athlete, played lacrosse at Cornell under Richie. We did not know each other. I was 86. He was 93. We didn't meet until a number of years later. You know, John actually comes from a Jewish Italian background. So Richie was so funny in the locker room. He'd whistle his whistle. Everybody knows it. And hey, big boy, make sure you get to church. You know, make sure you get to church. Almost kind of very religious. And yeah, John would say, hey, coach, remember, I'm Jewish. That's all right. You can go to church. It's good for you, kid. And John would laugh it off, but it would be a number of years later, Richie was planting seeds that John kind of had a spiritual awakening himself. And, you know, he speaks to this, he writes to this, his disposition had become very negative. I never knew him that way. He had the spiritual awakening, came to believe that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, put his faith in him. And that relationship is what inspired him to write. So in the Christian tradition, you've talked Father, Son, Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit comes on in us when we make a commitment to God. And the Holy Spirit inspires, leads, guides, directs, teaches, confirms. And the Spirit would speak to John, like he'd do these walks on the beach and he'd get these ideas for books. So his first book called The Energy Bus came out of that new relationship with God. And then it went to training camp. I think he's done 17 books. And one of his best books is, I think, Hard Hat, which is about kind of the life of George Biardi, who was a great student athlete at Cornell, got hit with a shot in the chest in 2004, 20 years ago. But he's an incredible writer. And John and I actually met through a friend, Dan Britton, at a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp. I think that's where we did about 20 years ago. And he's been a very good friend of FCA. He's been a good friend. I've had him speak to our company a number of times. He's an incredibly gifted speaker. He's big time now, you know. I can't afford him anymore. But, you know, it's just a natural fit. We were both influenced by Richie. We both had a spiritual awakening. We both love the Recreators game. And, you know, our faith connected us too. So I was very thankful to have him write the foreword.
You mentioned it a few times, but I know you've got some updates with respect to FCA Lacrosse that you're excited about. What's the latest going on there?
Yeah, well, you know, we first started FCA Lacrosse, and wasn't even a goal, in 1988. But FCA itself is an international organization, been around since 1954. And until, like, 88, it was mainly a football, basketball, baseball ministry, primarily in the Bible Belt, the South. And then I'm a knucklehead. I'm up at Cornell. I get introduced to something called Athletes in Action. I come back, start an Athletes in Action group at Calvert Hall in 1987. That summer, I learned about this thing called FCA, and it was a better fit for high school, middle school. So we changed the name of our little club from AIA to FCA. I don't really care about initials, but that was the beginning of something. And I learned that FCA did outreaches at coaches' conventions. So we've done an outreach breakfast, a free breakfast, for the last 30-plus years at every coaches' convention. And sometimes we get hundreds of coaches coming, and we let coaches share their story with other coaches. And then in 88, there was an FCA camp that had football, basketball, baseball, and they invited me to come and start lacrosse. So I did. We had like six kids pre-registered. We almost canceled it. We ended up with nine kids. It was me, Hank Jancic, and Fred Opie, the great player at Syracuse. So we had a 3-to-1 coach-kid ratio, but God blessed it. This last year, Terry, at our FCA lacrosse camp, we had over 500 kids, boys and girls, over 100 volunteer coaches just at a lacrosse camp. And so a lot's going on, and we're doing some things in the club space, camp space, coaches space. But this past year, a gentleman named Ryan Hornburg, who was the director of FCA lacrosse the last 15 years, decided to step down. And a good friend of mine, going back to middle school, Glenn Miles, asked to step up. And Glenn and I grew up in the area. Obviously, he was a great athlete, recruited Division I, three sports, football, basketball, lacrosse, into college. He chose the Naval Academy, did a year of basketball with David Robinson, had a phenomenal lacrosse career, All-American attackman junior year, first-team All-American, MIDI senior year, MIDI of the year, USA national team, 20-year Top Gun fighter pilot. But along the way, made some really, really, really bad decisions. His life was on a bad trajectory. On the outside looking in, he's got everything. On the inside looking out, he's dying. And he ended up actually on an FCA team in 2004. We were 40 years old. It was a master's team in Lake Placid. And through that team, had a spiritual awakening and surrendered his life to God. And so he's been involved with FCA lacrosse in California for a number of years, moved back to Baltimore because his three daughters are all playing, two now at Northwestern, one is a freshman at Navy. And Glenn's been really growing and asked, if, you know, interviewed and applied. And so for the last year, he's been the director of FCA lacrosse, doing a great job. His story's amazing. His story's in my book, a book of stories. So, you know, there's stories in there about Fred Opie, Gordon Purdy, like Vovo Devedimic in Ukraine, and Fred Osori in Kenya, you know, Patrick Oriana in Uganda. Like, it's just, we're all connected. And, you know, so many people know Glenn, and he's now doing a phenomenal job. Just started a Bible study for NCAA head coaches with Hank Jancic. I think Coach Joe Bresci was on the last one, Coach Nick Myers, Ohio State. And what I like to say about FCA, you know, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, we're not the Fellowship of Perfect Athletes or Coaches at all. We're the Fellowship of Broken athletes and coaches. We're the fellowship of forgiven athletes and coaches who just desire God's best for us and for our teams. No one coaches perfect. No one plays perfect. No one lives perfect. But FCA is just a tool to help develop that third dimension, mental, physical, spiritual. And Glenn's now a big part of it.
Well, Frank, we've covered a lot of ground, and you've been exceptionally generous with your time. What's next? You got another book in the chamber?
Actually, I do. I think I'm crazy, but when I was writing Influence in the Creator's Game, this guy, Bill Tamulonis, who helped write my dad's book, Bill interviewed 70 people for me. And I kept wanting to kind of share more in this book, but the book is long enough, and some people joke it's very heavy. Some incredible endorsements, by the way. Joe Tsai, he says, you know, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, San Diego Seals, has probably done more for lacrosse than anyone, said, young people in search of inspiration will find plenty in Influence in the Creator's Game. Athletes, business people, and those in the community of faith who are trying to figure out what direction to take in life will draw insight and motivation from Frank Kelly's story. John Harbaugh from the Ravens, you know, goes on, says some nice things about me. I won't brag, but he says Influence in the Creator's Game recounts amazing stories of transformation and hope in all these realms and will make you laugh and cry along the way. But there's a book I'm working on called right now, 60-40 Love. It might get retitled 12 Truths for a Blessed Life. And 60, I turned 60 this year, and it's the 40th anniversary of my spiritual work awakening or spiritual birth. So 60 physical, 40 spiritual. Here are the top 12 things I've learned over my knucklehead 40 plus 60 years that could be a blessing to you. I in the preface, I say in college, I hate to admit it, but I rarely read the books they assigned. I would always get the cliff notes, right? The summarized, and then I'd get the essence and try to wing it. I've kind of working on a book, kind of cliff notey, so guys like me can read it, understand it, hopefully practical. Obviously, it's got a faith-based component to it, so hoping it'll be out in the near future and hopefully bless and encourage those who choose to read it as well.
Well, I think that's a good note to end on. John Harbaugh has had a good week, but I'm sure he'll be appreciative of the inclusion in this conversation.
Yeah. Hey, Terry, I just say, too, the book's available at Amazon.com, Influence in the Creator's Game, and it's available in Audible. So again, a couple of my brothers, you know, they're not readers, but they listen and learn. We all learn in different ways. So whether reading or listening, and I just thank you for all you do for lacrosse. You know, we're all in it together. You know, we didn't get to talk about it, but what an incredible blessing that lacrosse is being recognized as an Olympic sport. And I was fortunate to be involved in that World Lacrosse Olympic Vision Committee. Just so thankful. I wish it wasn't sixes, but I'm glad we're going to be there. You're going to be there. You'll be covering it. And the game is growing around the world. There's now 13 countries in Africa playing lacrosse, man. I've been over there like three times. I've been to Uganda and Ethiopia a couple times. And last summer was in Kenya and Ghana. It's incredible to see the Creator's Game growing around the world. And thanks for the part you're playing in making that happen.
Yeah, no doubt. I will say the work in Africa is tremendous. And it's interesting insofar as how it you know, it strikes me the similarities in terms of the way that folks interpret the relationship between, you know, lacrosse being used as a tool in some economically disadvantaged American communities as a way to, you know, engage. And you know, one of the earliest lessons I learned at Inside Lacrosse was about how Harlem Lacrosse, it's not really a lacrosse organization. It's an academic organization that uses lacrosse as a tool. And, you know, having spoken to a lot of the folks that have been involved in the development of, you know, lacrosse teams and communities in Africa and understanding the role that they play in all sorts of development, it's really, you know, tremendous, you know, human aid work more than just lacrosse development.
Well, you know,
and certainly important in terms of the not only the growth and trajectory, but also the justification around Olympic inclusion and maybe something
right.
else that, you know, doesn't get the amount of attention that it deserves.
Yeah, well, this is really interesting. In America, we think of lacrosse as a privileged upper middle class sport. You know, we're trying everything we can to do to grow it in the cities. We're doing things in Baltimore with the Park Heights Saints, Charm City Lacrosse. But when I'm in Kenya, this is unbelievable. We went to Western Kenya. We did an overnight, first ever overnight fellowship of Christian athlete camps. 150 kids from these villages, and they love it. Like, they've seen soccer, they've seen track. There's an attraction to lacrosse. So we go to Nairobi and we tour the slums. There's five slums that surround this capital city of Nairobi, Kenya, like nothing you've ever seen. Like we've never seen poverty like this. And we went through the Makuro slums. There's there's a couple guys there. Like a lot of the teams on what will be the Kenyan national team are literally coming out of those slums. And you're like, why would anyone in a slum, I mean slum, play lacrosse? Now two of the five slums have active lacrosse programs. We're trying to get lacrosse going in all five slums, give these kids hope, dreams. These are the kids that are making up the Kenya national team. It's incredible. So the game is really being used to bless people in unique places. And it's different. The guy who started lacrosse in Ukraine, his name's Vova. His story's in here. Unbelievable. He learned lacrosse through a YouTube video. And then he met some guys in Poland and Russia. And this summer he had 150 kids at a camp in Ukraine. Sends me video because our company was a sponsor, whatever. And Frank, thank you. This is what's happening. Blue sky day, like today in Baltimore. And then it's all these kids having fun. And 10 hours later, Frank, we're in a bunker. Can you hear the bombs? He was in Kiev. And what's going on in war-torn areas, the hope, the joy for those kids through the Creators game. And he's on staff with FCA. So funny, he goes to the FCA guy in Ukraine, says, I want to go on staff with FCA and I want to start lacrosse. Why lacrosse? No one plays it. But there's a novelty about this game around the world that we don't even appreciate in America. And we know it's growing here too. So again, I love capturing stories, real-life stories. Good fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Everybody check out Influence and the Creators Game, available on Amazon and on Audible. Frank, we really appreciate your time. Look forward to catching up next time.
Thanks, Terry. God bless you, buddy. Peace.
Thank you.
You
as well.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.